It's Northeast Delta Dental Radio with Tom Raffio.
Welcome to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm also the head coach of the dental insurance company known as Northeast Delta Dental. Well, it's hard to believe we're already into April. The baseball season has started. It's April 6th and 7th, depending on when you're listening to this. If you are listening to this on Saturday, April 6th, it is the second race of the Capital Area Race Series. That's at 10 a.m., so there's still time to register. It's the SCA 5K Road Race and Fitness Walk, so there are many, many, many walkers. And just come on up to the Department of Transportation off Loudoun Road. You can also register not only for the race itself, individually, but for the entire series, which began a couple weeks ago in Gilmington and ends in July at the Canterbury Woodchuck Classic on Saturday, July 27th. Big shout out to my running friends for participating in the last Winter Wild Series in Gunstock on Saturday, March 30th. And then many people also did the Shamrock Half Marathon. We sponsor the Northeast Delta Dental Points Chase, and that's one race that's part of that. And then on Sunday, March 31st, was the 2 miles Shamrock Shuffle, which started at 11:15. But switching gears from sports and March Madness and the opening of the Red Sox, this weekend with me is Dr. Donald Cox. Don is a dental director, the dental director at Northeast Delta Dental. He's a practicing dentist, has been with us for several years, and is an awesome colleague. And while this topic today isn't necessarily one that is probably a happy topic, I think it's one that's needed. So we're here this weekend, April 6th and 7th, to talk about mouth sores. So let's talk about the various types of mouth sores, cold sores, canker sores, and the trauma perhaps that creates it. So let's kind of give us an overarching view of mouth sores.
Well, there's too many to really mention, but the three most common that we have are cold sores, which are caused by a virus, herpes simplex, canker sores, for which we don't know the cause, and trauma, which all of you have done to yourselves at one time or another, whether biting your cheek, biting your tongue, chewing into a crunchy piece of bread, whatever it might be. There are many other types of sores, but these are the principal ones that everyone sees on a daily basis. Cold sores are caused by a virus called herpes simplex type 1 in 90% of the cases. There is now, over the last two decades, an increasing occurrence of herpes type 2 lesions in the oral cavity. Herpes type 2 used to be limited to the anal genital region, and because of social patterns, we now see them in the oral region as well. The main difference between the canker sore and the cold sore in diagnosing whether it's one or the other is the location. The cold sore, herpes simplex type 1 lesion, is usually on the lip. It's if you look at your lip, there's a keratinized area of tissue, which is divided by a line between the buccal mucosa, which is the unkeratinized tissue on the inside of the mouth, and the keratinized on the outside. The keratinized usually is where you'll find the cold sores. It's usually on the outer side of the lip. You'll notice if you're prone to cold sores, you'll notice that there's usually a prodromal period. You'll feel it coming on, usually a day or so in advance. You'll feel a little tingling, sometimes a little burning. And a day later, maybe a day and a half later, you'll see a little raised area. Eventually that blisters, and these are highly infectious. And you have to be very careful if they're in your children or on you, that you don't contaminate food utensils, that you don't touch anyone, that you don't put your hands on your lip and then touch someone. Because, as a matter of fact, dentists have a high frequency of these lesions on their fingers from touching patients. In that case, it's called herpetic Whitlow.
So just pausing there for a minute. So what does a dentist do to make sure that he or she isn't, spreading that accidentally? A lot of washing of the hands, a lot of gloves, plastic.
In the old days, it was very difficult to prevent it because washing your hands didn't really kill all the virus. But now that dentists change gloves regularly, it's not so much of a problem as it used to be. But you'll see many old pictures of dentists with big lesions on their fingers. It was fairly common.
Tell us, what are the symptoms different between a cold sore and a canker sore?
Other than the location, they're very, very similar. The cold sore will eventually rupture into a blister, and that's when it becomes infectious and then finally crust. The canker sore is a necrotic lesion inside the mouth. It never really blisters and is much, much more painful on a per-size basis than the lip lesion caused by herpes. We don't know really what causes canker sores. It's been looked at for more than several decades, 40 years now. The best evidence we have dates back to the 1970s. There was an immunologist named Tom Lehner. He worked at Guy's Hospital in London, and he found that there was a cross-reactivity between the antibodies in people that got canker sores and strep group A antigens. So there was some evidence that he produced in a paper that Streptococcus group A antigens are a common bacterial antigen that's in your mouth. And some people react to these, some people don't. Some people's reaction might cause a type of autoimmunity. We have no treatment for either right now. When canker sores get very serious, there's various severe forms of the disease. They can be treated by IV corticosteroids. Cold sores, there's really no effective treatment. I know there's an ointment that's prescribed by many offices called Zovirex, and it's been shown in a paper in 2012 in a study of 18 papers. It's a meta-analysis of 18 papers to be relatively ineffective, but it's still prescribed. And the FDA has not cleared it for treatment of virus infections, and and there's no evidence in the literature provided by the company that it's effective for herpes type 1 lesions.
So that's cold sore. So switching back to canker sore, so you're saying there is treatment for canker sores?
No, there's no treatment for canker sores, yeah. Unless they're very severe. Okay. The simple canker sore is best left alone. It'll heal in 7 to 10 days, just like the herpes lesion on the lip. When they become very severe, it becomes a disease called Sutton's type 1 disease. And these lesions can be larger than 10 millimeters, and they can actually cause people to be hospitalized. In that case, they administer IV corticosteroids to these patients.
When it turns into Sutton's, are you saying? Or?
Yeah.
Wow.
There's even a more severe form. They don't know if the disease is really related. It's called Boucher syndrome, and it involves similar lesions on the eyes, the genitals, and the oral cavity all at the same time. And these can be severely debilitating, and these people are almost always hospitalized.
Wow. So the typical, for lack of a better term, more routine canker sore, again, how long would that typically last?
7 to 10 days.
7 to 10 days.
Leave it alone.
And it would
if it's really painful, there is a gel that you can put on, or a base or a gel as a bandage, and it protects it from being touched and reduces the pain somewhat. And there's even an aura base with topical anesthetic in it. But there's one with Kenalog, which is a corticosteroid, but it seems to be ineffective in studies that have been done.
So remind us, what helps precipitate a canker sore? Are you going to add stress to that?
Well, there's a genetic component. It's usually in younger people. Most people tend to outgrow it as they get older. Trauma, sour foods, ketchup, tomatoes, pineapple, frequently are associated with the occurrence of canker sores.
You're the average person listening to this radio show. What can you do to preempt or prevent getting a cold sore or a canker sore? if you knew
sit
that
in
answer,
the,
you'd be a multimillionaire.
Sit in the house in an easy chair and eat bland food. But
Okay, well.
Realistically, there's not a lot you can do unless you... are willing to take a lot of great foods out of your diet, and everyone's exposed to trauma. When it could be simply biting into a crusty bread might bring on a canker sore in some people.
Herpes simplex. So how can you be sure that the infection is actually caused by herpes?
PCR, genetic analysis of the DNA in the virus, but it's not worth doing. There's no reason to do it. It doesn't dictate the course of the disease, and it doesn't dictate treatment. The treatment for herpes simplex or a cold sore on the lip is just to leave it alone, and like a canker sore, 7 to 10 days.
That seems to be the magic number, 7 to 10 days.
It is, yeah. And generally,
you have to be patient, right?
It is, and generally, if it might be something more serious, if you're looking for what it also could be, you wait. That's the reason you wait 14 days. If it's still there, then you start. Then you go back to your dentist or your physician and have them take a second look at it. Yeah. It might be something more serious.
So after commercial break, we're going to be talking about oral cancer. So what's the final word on cold sores and canker sores? Just sounds like if you're going to get it, you're going to get it.
On the lip? you're going to get it, you're going to get it. In both cases, most people tend to outgrow both. The herpes simplex virus is it's an infection that occurs early. The primary infection are usually 3 to 5 year olds, and they can be either symptomatic or asymptomatic. If they're symptomatic, it can be a relatively severe infection. It can be a high fever. It's called gingivostomatitis, herpetic gingivostomatitis. Most kids, however, get it, and they never know they had it. But you carry it with you throughout your life. It resides in a ganglion at the base of the brain called the Gossarian ganglion, trigeminal ganglion. And periodically, sunlight, trauma, like with canker sores, but sunlight also will bring on a herpes type 1 lesion.
Welcome back to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. Tom Raffia with Dr. Don Cox, who is the dental director, one of my great colleagues at Northeast Delta Dental. And we've had Don on the show before. We've also had Dr. Shannon Mills on the show before. We've had Dr. Mitch Curray. We've had Dr. Bob Urban. We've had Dr. Andy McKibben. So we try to get as many of our dentist consultants and directors here to talk about oral health. Because after all, I know I talk a lot about wellness and sports and not-for-profit organizations, but I do like to, you know, bring it home to oral health, which is, after all, the spread of affordable dental care is basically the primary mission of Northeast Delta Dental. And so the way it works at Northeast Delta Dental, Don leads several part-time dental consultants that review claims. We also have 3 registered dental hygienists that go out and do lunch and learns for our dental offices to talk about our health oral wellness program. As if we have time after we talk about oral cancer, we'll talk about dental plan design, and that the 2 cleanings a year really is not based on science, and we'll get to that if we have time. So, Don, let's one other thing for my running friends. If you are listening to this, it's still time to get down to the SCA 5K Saturday, April 6th at 10 a.m. Just go down go up Loudon Road, get to the Department of Transportation, and the gun goes off at 10 a.m., and you can register not only for the individual race, but for the entire 8 races of the Capital Area Race Series. So, Don, let's talk about oral cancer. So what kind of cancer can occur in the mouth?
Well, quite a few kinds, but the vast majority of oral cancers are what are called squamous cell carcinomas. They occur both in the forward part of the oral cavity and the oral pharyngeal area in the back of the throat. There are also Ruruca cell carcinomas. There's even melanomas, which have been found in the oral cavity. But usually when you're talking about oral cancer, you're talking about what's called a squamous cell carcinoma.
So you're saying you can get melanoma in the mouth too?
You can.
So is someone sunbathing with their mouth open? Or
no, you don't have to have sun exposure to get a melanoma.
I know. Just it's not a funny topic, but I know that somehow crossed my mind. But in any event, so I know you're going to say tobacco smoking, chewing tobacco, the new e-cigarettes. I'm anticipating that that is probably some of the causes of oral cancer, and there's probably unluck as well. But tell us about, from your point of view, what are the causes of oral cancer?
Well, oral and oral pharyngeal cancer are usually grouped together as one entity. 70% of oral and oral pharyngeal cancer now is associated with HPV, a virus. There is a immunization for that virus, which seems to be, according to the CDC and American Cancer Society and the ADA, very effective at reducing the incidence of oral cancer later in life.
And we've had programs on HPV, which do try to educate the dental community on the HPV vaccination. Do you want to talk about that? I know that can be a little controversial, but...
There's no controversy as to whether the vaccine is effective. We know it is. The controversy is because it involves encouraging young people, 11, 12 years old, to receive two immunizations. Dentists historically haven't wanted to delve into sexually transmitted diseases, so the controversy is largely about whether they should be discussing it or not, or leave it up to the physician. And I think the ADA now has taken the position that it's everyone's responsibility because this vaccine is so effective, and that's not debatable. If you don't get it at 11 or 12, which requires two immunizations 5 months apart, you can still receive it if you're male up to age 26, and recommendations for females now are up to age 21.
Like I said, there's no disputing the science. It just can be apparently an awkward conversation.
It can be. When you're dealing with 11 and 12-year-olds, yes, or their parents. But it's something that parents should feel obligated to take on as a topic in their household, and the dentist should also get involved in.
Okay. Is oral HPV testing effective?
No, not at all. There's actually a number of companies that are marketing HPV DNA testing, and the tests are completely ineffective for pragmatic as well as scientific reasons. Virtually everyone at a certain age in their life has been exposed to HPV, and everyone tests antibody positive, 90% plus of the population by a certain age. The test is, technically it's called an ELISA, enzyme-linked immunosorbent assay, and it looks for antibody levels, or there's a DNA test that looks for DNA. And what you're looking at when you see these results is a possible positive, which may mean absolutely nothing because there's a lot of false positives in these tests. Or you might get a negative because you didn't get a sample of the virus in the saliva sample that you took, because the virus is usually resident in the posterior back of the mouth and it's not in the saliva. So for both reasons, the test is invalid. The CDC, the ADA, and the American Cancer Society all recommend against oral cancer testing of any kind. If the dentist or the physician think you have oral cancer, the only viable test is a biopsy.
Yep, that's been pretty clear the last few years. So how common is oral cancer? And I know we've seen the very dramatic results of people losing half their face when they use, chewing tobacco and things like that. But how common is oral cancer?
Well, before I get into that, in people who are HPV positive and have been infected with HPV, the likelihood of getting oral cancer if you smoke and drink is fivefold greater. Right now, we're looking at about oral cancers as a whole, about 53,000 cases identified in the United States each year. About 12,000 people die every year. Approximately right now, it's gone up a little bit in the last couple years, but It's about a 50 to 58% five-year survival rate on oral cancer. And the reasons are multiple. One is of which is it's usually not detected early because it's inside your mouth. You don't see it. Usually it's a dentist that actually sees it first. The second reason is because, unlike other parts of your body, the cancer can spread early in the oral cavity because there's no, they're called fascial planes. These are areas of tissue that prevent metastases or the tumor from going elsewhere. And in the oral cavity, there's a lack of fascial planes to protect the person. So it frequently metastasizes early. So if you wait that 14 days after your aphthous ulcer or your cold sore and the lesion is still there, see someone. Because the ramifications, if you don't, can be very serious.
That makes sense. So tell us about smoking and oral cancer and other forms of tobacco.
Well, we've known for years that the incidence of oral cancer in smokers is high, much higher than the average population, and the incidence in heavy alcohol users is much higher. And there seem to be comorbid in that people who drink and smoke, the incidence, as I said, can be 5 to upwards to 10-fold what a normal individual, non-smoker, non-drinker might experience. Don't smoke, don't drink.
Okay, that's pretty clear. And don't use chewing tobacco, right?
Chewing tobacco is a primary culprit in the formation, okay, the etiology of squamous cell carcinomas.
Yeah, and it's great that they've outlawed that in minor league baseball, and it's being phased out in major league baseball as well. So we got about a minute or so. Let's switch gears to a more positive topic, and that is health rural wellness. We have this great program that is powered by Previsor software, and you go in for your cleaning now. The hygienist, she or he takes you through a series of questions in the operatory, and then if your score is 3, 4, or 5, like in my case, then you're entitled to perhaps an additional cleaning, a Del Floride varnish. So tell us why 2 cleanings a year and going to the dentist twice a year, while it's a good benchmark, it isn't necessarily based on science, and how the Previsor program that we call Health Rural Wellness, or HOW, can really customize a plan for both the patient and the dentist.
Happenstancely, I just went to a funeral. The father of the link between dental and medical just passed away about a week and a half ago, Bob Janko at the University of Buffalo. He established the link between heart disease and periodontal disease. So sorry to see him go.
Yeah.
He was a good person.
He's pretty famous, and for years the mouth was separated, from the body, but we know it's together. And again, the Health Rural Wellness Program is allowing Northeast Delta Dental, at our cost, if you will, to cover additional cleanings and services through the enhanced benefits, based on evidence. So we've come a long way. Dr. Don, thank you for all you've done to elevate the science at Northeast Delta Dental and basically shepherding all of the various dental consultants, generalists, and specialists that work with us. Appreciate it.
Tom, thank you for all you've done for us.